Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include local judge, tournament organiser, and contributor to the Australian Tabletop Gaming Network, Thomas Daniel.
Hey guys.
Runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey there.
Two-time store champion and two-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horry.
Hey, what's up?
2014 Adelaide Regional Champion and 2014 Australian National Champion, Jesse Marshall.
Howdy.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. We're going to start things off today with a bit of a playtesting primer. Wilfie, you're quite passionate about the subject. What do you bring to the table?
Yeah, this is a topic near and dear to my heart, not just because I'm competitive in games, but also because I like statistics and generally empirical data in all folk fields. So while that might scare some of you off, I hope it doesn't, but playtesting, for those who don't know, is playing games of Netrunner with a focus to making your deck optimal for tournaments. Not necessarily big tournaments. It can be anywhere from your local game night to nationals or regionals or nationals. But the focus is on playing games to optimize and improve your deck. So for those who might not know where to start in playtesting, the most important thing is to have a feel of what the important decks that you might come across during the day. So at the moment, while we record this, the most important decks in the meta are, say, Andromeda midrange on the runner side, and on the corpse side, Near Earth Hub, Fast Advance. But you might come across some other decks like Slow Kate on the runner side and Wayland Scorched on the corpse side. But so the way in which you can establish what decks there might be for you to face against is, as with many other things, to go on the internet. I don't know what people did before the internet. Presumably things moved much more slowly, but now that we have the internet, we have a wealth of information to analyze and to dig through. And with this wealth of information comes with the need to separate the good from the bad. So when you're looking at decks which might come up against you that are important, because of course there are lots of decks, but when we have a limited amount of time, we can't talk about everything, we can't discuss, we can't test against everything, so we need to focus our energies on maybe 3 to 5 decks from each side that are going to be important at your next tournament. So the website I most like to look at lists from is StimHack, but I also like Reddit/Netrunner and BoardGameGeek, although those are a bit bigger and a bit more open, so they don't have as stringent a quality requirement. So if you go to StimHack, then you can see tournament winning deck lists. There's a tab, and while it might look like all of those should be considered equally, there are a couple of factors to take into account. The first is how many players the tournament has. Obviously, a tournament with 10 players is more likely to be won by an off-the-wall deck or a deck that isn't a major player compared to a tournament with, say, 80 players, where you're almost guaranteed that the winner will be a deck which is consideration in the metagame. So that's the first consideration and very important. I would usually tend to stick to tournaments with, say, 30 or 40 players and up when building your metagame, but if the data sets are limited, there you might have to cut it down. But I'd say that's a good guideline. Another thing to keep in mind is how recently the results were. While some packs don't have cards which changed the metagame in a huge way, other packs do. For example, NAPD Contract, Jackson Howard, and Near Earth Hub are some examples of recent cards which have had a big shift. So I would say that if you were to only focus your attention on tournaments that have been after these major shifts, you'll get the best result. So now that you have these decks, you can build them up. I like to use proxies or just get some friends over and have each person build one, two, or three decks, and you can test your decks. Not only the decks that you like to play against those decks, but also those decks against each other, because it's very important to get a feel for how those decks play when you're playing against them. So once you do that, hopefully you can get some data and maybe run like five game sets, one runner against one corp, and then switch, or some other method. But the most important thing is that you have some idea of what your deck is trying to do and what you're trying to beat when you play your deck. And it's important that if your deck doesn't perform, it's always an option to switch to a deck that's already established if you didn't already start there.
Wilfie, what would you say when you're playtesting, say when we were recently playtesting before Nationals, what were you looking for in games as sort of markers to look at? Like, is it just about what deck wins the games, or is it about sort of how powerful it feels while you're playing it, how well you think the strategy is working, things like that?
Great question. It's not necessarily about who wins the games, because of course there's going to be some variance and some statistical error in the sets that you play, but you're looking for things like, can my deck keep up against a fast deck? Can you keep up with the speed at which they pressure you? And against a slow deck, can you keep up with the resources of which they force you to gain in order to continue to stay powerful as the game goes along? I'd say those are the two major things to look out for.
And could you maybe give us some examples of that from the recent testing? So, say when you were playing your Hearthspire Fast Advanced deck, which is your pet deck, when you were playing that against the two runner decks we mainly tested with were Kate and Andromeda, how did you sort of alter your strategy, and how did you come to the opinion that the deck was worth playing against those two or was powerful enough?
Exactly. So when I played against Kate, which is a slow a runner deck that tries to gain advantage in the long game by establishing heavy R&D access, you need to have a plan to score agendas early and also be able to get to a stage late where even if they hit your R&D, you have an agenda in hand and are able to fast advance it so that you can win. So the important thing that I learned from that matchup was that you need to be aggressive about scoring points, because otherwise you couldn't get to a point later where you could win even if it looked like the game was going well. And against Andromeda, the main thing is that you can protect your servers early to prevent the Andromeda player getting a large economic advantage. And this was quite easy for the HB Fast Advance deck to do because of the way it was built. It had big ice and was quite slow compared to some other more aggressive Fast Advance decks. So defending your servers, especially your centrals early, was the biggest part of that matchup.
And I might just chime in there with sort of when I was testing Corp, I tested both Near Earth Hub and the Wayland deck that I ended up playing quite heavily. And one of the things that really swayed me in testing, I'd say when I started out, I would have been 80 or 90% sure I was going to play Near Earth Hub. And when I finished, it was pretty much 50-50. And the reason that changed was that I found in all the common matchups, and particularly against Andromeda, that Near Earth Hub, if it didn't get enough of an advantage early, it couldn't come back. It was very much whoever got ahead won the game, most of the time. And Andromeda is so good at getting that advantage early in the game, and your ice is not good enough at keeping them out, that more often than not, you had to have quite good draws to win. And I think that for me is the indicator of when I am ready to switch a deck or switch the deck completely or amend the deck is when I feel like I'm having to have good hands to win.
I often find that when I begin testing a deck, when I have, a new 45 cards and they all look kind of weird together, or maybe they make some semblance of sense to me, I often find I do need to just pick it up and play it with my friends and see exactly what I can't deal with. Say I'm running, say I'm testing out my new Anarch Runner deck, I need to know which piece of ice can't I go through at which point in the game, and how did that screw me over? And these are questions that I'll try and find solutions to either by having stronger economy or trying to find more ways to draw cards if the deck's not fast enough, or if the deck's too fast and you lose power too quickly, you want to try and move the deck back in the other direction. But it's not just two directions you can move in. There are lots of different ways you can alter your deck with card quality or with variations in the style of cards that you use to try and leverage a matchup into your to feel comfortable in the matchup.
That's similar to what we talked about last week with the difference between same old thing and express delivery, how they serve very similar functions but at opposite ends of the scale.
Exactly that.
So, I guess the other question I have for you, Wilfie, is how do you go about selecting which deck you're going to end up playing, and how do you make that evaluation after you've done all this playtesting?
Yeah, well, that's really what the playtesting process is getting to, is finding out what deck feels the best, is able to deal with the decks that you expect to be present, and you're able to play to a satisfactory level that you feel it's the best choice. Because, of course, it's about finding the best choice. If a deck is very strong, but for some reason, hopefully this it doesn't happen, but for some reason you don't have enough time or enough experience with it, then it doesn't really make that much sense to play it if you think that you're going to not be as successful with it as with another deck. And the other deck can be your own deck, it can be a deck from the internet, or it can be some fusion of the two. But the important thing is that you believe it will give you the best chance to win the tournament.
That's excellent. So I think it's really important to pass on to our listeners. Moving on, our first deck tech for this episode is on Near Earth Hub Fast Advance. Both Liam and myself played this deck at Nationals, and we've tested it pretty extensively. As far as playing the deck goes, I think that you're really looking at establishing your economy at the beginning to get ahead with cards like Sweeps Week, especially against Andromeda. That's just an absolute blowout if you can do it on
It's
turn one.
massive.
Into hedge fund, and then obviously you've got restructure at the top of the scale. I think protecting HQ is a little bit more important than R&D, especially in the early game, because you want to get ahead in economy. Cards like Account Siphon or God forbid Vamp, just such a blowout. I've like in the early game, I'll leave R&D uniced if I have to for a few turns. Like I don't mind like them if they steal
Yeah.
a 2 for 1 off the top. That's no problem.
Definitely. There are lots of agendas in the deck, but with the inclusion of NAPV
Yeah,
contracts
exactly
into
right.
Near Earth Hub and noting that there aren't that many ways to score 7 points with this, there are no ways to score 7 points without four accesses.
Exactly right, yeah.
Having R&D uniced for a few turns is not the worst thing in the
No,
world.
it's not. You do have quite a lot of cheap ice, especially cheap ice that forces quite often expensive breakers like Quandary, which forces the runner to go get their Yogg or go get their Gordian Blade. And where Yogg is expensive to install, Gordian Blade is very expensive
It's a
to
big
utilize.
investment. We played essentially the same
We play
deck.
almost
It's
identical
actually the
lists,
same 46 cards, I believe. We have a few cards different. 40, 45 cards. So Brian has the three wraparounds, whereas I have three paper walls, and you have the extra Enigma, whereas I chose to have a third restructure, taking it up to a full suite of three sweeps week, three hedge funds, three restructures, and three shipment from Sand Sands as a full 12-card economy package.
The economy is very
Yeah,
important.
and just
I think
that
there's.
spread of incredibly cheap, effective ice like Paper Wall and like Quandary that do demand expensive breakers lets you be incredibly aggressive. And even in a metagame with a lot of Andromeda, with a lot of criminal playing inside jobs, I found a lot of the time I could just on turn two after putting a Quandary or something like that in front of HQ, play a Paper Wall, play a pop-up window, stop that inside job, and put an Astro Script behind it. I scored a
You're
lot
a
of.
madman.
I played a. I scored a lot of Astro Scripts
Yeah, doing
slowly,
that.
like base set.
Can I ask you guys about Shipment from Sand Sand? Because there are a lot of Near Earth Hub lists on the internet that don't play through Shipment from Sand Sands. How did you find that card?
Shipment from Sand Sand is fantastic. Especially if you get to that my favorite time to use shipment is when you're on a match point. I'll say if you're on 5 points and your opponent knows that you're out of credits for whatever reason, because toward the late game sometimes your credit pool can get a bit low. If your opponent knows that you can't score an agenda without having to spend two clicks getting credits, and then you just shipment from Sand Sand your agenda out. It's just excellent there. I'll even use it like arrogantly early on when I don't need to, just to save credits for that, the hedge fund that's in my hand for the
Yeah,
following turn as well.
it's
Like you don't have to use it only when you have no credits. You can definitely use it when you have like 6 credits and then, hedge fund into a restructure the following turn. That's perfectly fine.
just like we're playing fast tracks for some amount of resilience to a multiple R&D interface.
Yeah.
We are.
Which is a brilliant, an amazing card, by the way. It's one of my favorite cards.
Fast track is insane, and I want to come back to it in a bit.
Yeah.
But you do need that resilience there because your ice is so permissible coming into the mid game. So you are going to start seeing account siphons rear their ugly heads, and people are going to come into your HQ. You're cold to legwork. You're cold to account siphon. And shipment from Sansan actually solves both problems quite elegantly. Firstly, by being an operation and therefore not an agenda and not trashable. It gives it a little bit of resilience to legwork in the same way that any piece of ice or any operation will hang around your hand and give some amount of resilience to legwork.
Yeah.
You also get to score breaking news or score through shipment of through Sansan City Grid or score with an AstroScript token. With no credits in your credit pool.
Which is excellent. Which is like I was saying before, for that match point. Yeah. Or even just to move it through and put the pressure on and move to match point.
Yeah, a lot of the time you'll have a biotic labor and you will score the biotic labor, you'll score through a biotic labor for 6 credits. Or for 4 credits. Rather than
which is better. Yeah. It really makes that taxing.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Rather than the seven credits, it pulls it down to 5.
And playing things like restructure, you need to recognize that there's a big difference between having 3 credits and 5 credits, and the big difference between having 8 credits and 10 credits in your credit pool. And so whilst
that's also a really good place where pop-up window becomes excellent. I know a lot of people sort of when they see the pop-up window they're like whatever, I pay one, and then as soon as they got their YOG out or their code gate breaker, usually especially YOG, they're not even thinking about that 1 credit that the corp is gaining. Yeah. Particularly if you've got a server with multiple pop-ups on it, I'm almost like wanting the runner, go in there please, like that's just two credits that's bringing me up and making that difference between 8 and 10 like you're talking about. Yeah. You know, so you can fire that off.
And that was my reasoning behind the paper wall. Incidentally, it's a very different card to wrap around in the mid game. It's gone rather than it's mildly taxing.
Yeah.
But it does save you that 2 credits in the early game, does get your restructure online marginally quicker. And my reasoning was that if you could get your restructures online quicker, if you could get your Sansans online just slightly quicker, you would be able to kill them much faster coming into the mid game. And the reasoning worked out exactly the way I expected it to.
Do you think, Liam, moving forward with Quetzal being a thing, you might move your paper walls into?
Quetzal is very threatening. Yeah. Quetzal is going to be the bad bitch. Paper wall is not exactly resilient to her. Wraparound might need to be a thing coming into the future, which means maybe losing restructure. I don't know. It's going to be a different thing in the future. Although a development I am looking forward to in Neuroth Hub is actually playing a third breaking news and a third fast track. These cards, I think, are absolutely fantastic. And yeah. I think I'm prepared to just play a 21st point.
Yeah, can you guys talk a bit about fast track? Because I think that's something that we fluctuated between 1 and 2 in our testing and ended up settling on 2, I think, in both your decks.
Yeah, well, I went from 3 because I really wanted to play 3 of, and argued down to 2, and I think it was to fit that second restructure in there, which was definitely the correct choice to make. But if I could fit a third one in there, I would love to, because it's so good.
I think at this point, I would be willing to just be more aggressive, lose a few of those ice I don't think are as important, lose some opportunity to just play ice agenda and score the old-fashioned way, but gain a scoring opportunity by just having fast tracks earlier.
Yeah.
The third breaking news would give you the opportunity to score 2, go up to 6 points, and then score a third for the 7th without needing to overscore for the win, which happens a lot in this current situation where you have 2 breaking news. When you have a fast track and a Sansan or a fast track and an AstroScript token, you can't score a breaking news from your deck if you've already scored them or if one of them's been stolen, and that won't score you the 7th point. So
although I do find I'm only ever fast tracking for my breaking news if it is a match point. First of all, I mean, my dream game is obviously Astro, something else, whatever. you know, like, but like basically, if you've got a fast track in hand and you've either got the Astro token or the Sansan on you're just threatening so much. Mm-hmm. And particularly, as I was saying to you earlier, like, my favorite thing is when the runner runs my deck and they let out this groan when they see the fast track on top, because, you know, that's where it's going.
The Astro is so important to the style as well.
Of course.
It's exactly like Jesse was saying earlier. Sometimes this matchup really just does come down to exactly who can pull ahead the fastest. And when you are in a position to score anything for the win, they do need to start feeling awful and trashing unres Sansans. They really do need to start running every server that has anything face down there. And unless your opponent's packing imps, if you are packing something like Ash, or if you are packing something like Biotic Labor, they're going to need to have a legwork and the singularity to even try and come out of that situation, which just isn't reasonable to expect of a runner, even in the early or mid game.
When it comes to playing against Near Earth Hub, I think before we get into anything, one of the most important things I think we need to mention for a lot of players out there, I do see this a lot, especially in the early game. Someone will run my R&D and see either a Jackson Howard or a Sansan, and they will spend the credits to trash it.
Don't
Do
do
not
that.
do that,
No.
because putting yourself behind on credits like that, especially when I've just talked about how important the economy is just, it's just really bad. The only time you should trash Sansan is after your opponent has already spent their six to res
Yeah,
it.
this is the power of being on 5 points and not four. When the corp is on 5 points, you will actually need to start trashing the sand sets, or you will need to find a way to deal with the biotic labor in their hand, be it an imp or be it, I don't know, some. Maybe you can mindslaver them in corporate.
Well, no, denying them agendas is the only other way you can do it. Yeah, those are your two options.
Lock them out of R&D or something like that. I find that a lot of the time in the early game, the most threatening plays to me, the ones where they don't interact very early, they establish,
Yeah,
just put some
indeed.
breakers into play. They just play a Kurother and start running with it. They just play a Yogg and start running with it. And yes, a lot of the runners will get caught out by the Rotho, but at the same time, you're only playing one.
From my perspective, playing against Near Earth Hub, the most important thing is to try and deny them the first Astro. So I think you have to run HQ in the first few turns. They're probably going to play at least one economy card and probably one or two ice on the first turn, which means that they're going to have four or five cards in hand. And you should be running there. You should be trying to make that a priority to get in there, see what's there. And then, yeah, locking them out of R&D is, or knowing your game plan. The important thing is to know how you're going to be faster than them. Because there are very few ways to do it, but you need to have one of them.
Yeah.
Denying the deck Astros and leaving them only with Project Beals and NAPD contracts as the pilot of the NEH deck, that's not the situation you want to be in. You want to know that you've got Astros coming because it just feels much better and much quicker and works way better for your game plan. You don't want to rely only on the Sansan to try and get you there in the end.
The ice is also just so small, so it is very reasonable for a runner just to slam something, slam some any kind of program in the first few turns and just start running with it, and just force the Near Earth Hub into the mid game early, much earlier than
Then they'd like it to be,
they'd like
yeah.
to be in the mid game with an Astro Script token. They'd like to have a few turns to actually just play some ice. Yeah, if you can force them into the mid game and demand ice on R&D, demand ice on HQ, or even, hell, if they have security testings, demand ice on Archives. You're going to need to find
Indeed.
it,
Yeah.
and most of it's not very good if they have anything to deal with it.
No, you certainly don't want to leave security testing unanswered. Okay, moving on to our second deck text, old mate Kate from the core set. So, Jesse, you've been piloting this deck for quite a long time with, I don't want to say varying degrees of success, lots of success. So what can you tell us about that deck?
Yeah, as runner, I like to know exactly what I want to do throughout the game, and I like to be prepared for different matchups. So what this deck allows you to do is to be aggressive because you can get good value for your runs. You're playing Desperados and Data Suckers, which are just great economy returns on all of your runs. But it also allows you to play control against either Jinteki or Wayland, who are punishing you for successful runs. You can sit there on your professional contacts having really efficient clicks. That they're not going to be able to outpace probably throughout the game. And in the meanwhile, you are also building up R&D interfaces and Maker's Eyes in your hand, as well as an Icebreaker rig that's going to allow you to get through anything, which is going to mean that you're going to be seeing five or six cards off R&D at least once or twice in the mid to late game. And it's a powerful game plan. You can try and snipe those early agendas where you need to. You can play fast against decks that you need to, but you can also have those really big punishing runs later on against either HB Glacier decks, Wayland Glacier decks, or Jinteki decks. And I will say one thing that I've changed around the deck a little bit is including two indexing, mostly for Jinteki. It allows you to avoid some of those traps in R&D, some of the cards that punish multi-access. Wayland as well plays Scorched. So being able to avoid snares off your five or six card accesses later in the game is really important, and that's where indexing comes in.
I think with Kate, since regional season, I believe in the UK, regionals and nationals is where we first started to see the popularization of the prepaid voice pad Kate lists. What's your take on voice pad?
I just don't think there's the deck space for it. I don't really understand the utility of spending those clicks early on. Making yourself even slower than you need to be, investing in this hardware that just gives you a marginal advantage whenever you play a sure gamble. yes, it helps you to pay for Sure Gamble. Yes, it means that if you're splashing Lucky Find, which I think is a mistake, that you get a little bit more off that. But I would much rather just play professional contacts. The way I play this deck is I basically mulligan into professional contacts. And if I don't have it in my opening hand, I dig for it as early as I can. Make sure I have the 5 credits to play it, because it just provides you an engine and consistency that allows you to reliably deploy your rig in a reasonable period of time before decks are able to beat you. All the while you can be running, and then later on your multi-access on R&D is going to be far stronger than anything the corp's doing at that point.
Given the pacing of the deck relies so heavily on professional contacts, do you find that there's any variance to your win rate with respect to just how you mulligan?
If you have professional contacts on turn one, particularly if you have one other economy card, it's really powerful. If you either have a Dirty Laundry or a Sure Gamble that you can play with your first click before you install contacts, it's just incredible. If you can have Desperado, Data Sucker, and professional contacts in play sometime in the first couple of turns, you're just in a really great spot. You've got a lot of flexibility. You can dig for whatever breakers you need. You've got breaker tutors in terms of self-modifying code. Self-modifying code can also fetch parasites to give you a really cheap, efficient, aggressive way to get into servers when you absolutely need to. If you know that they've got a couple of agendas in hand early on and you just really need to get past that piece of ice they've got there, if it's a quandary or something, you can fetch a parasite. And then if you've drawn up a couple of clone chips, you know that that's going to get you through 2 more pieces of ice as well. So yeah, you've got a lot of aggressive options in the deck, a lot of efficient options, but you've also got these really hard-hitting cards in the Maker's Eye and R&D interface that you can always go into. Oh, the other thing, I guess, is Modded. Modded is a fantastic economy card. I think too few Kate decks play Modded. I pretty much tend not to play R&D interface most of the time unless I've got a Modded in hand, because being able to play it for free is just fantastic.
I'm actually surprised you would suggest anyone would ever not play Modded in the Kate deck. The card is insane.
And just briefly, Jesse, do you have any advice for people playing against Kate?
I guess be aggressive. As Wilfie said earlier when he was talking about his Haas Bioroid deck, it's very important to try and get early agenda scored to put pressure on the deck. As I said earlier, you want to play professional contacts. You want to be able to sit on that, be clicking it once or twice each turn, and using your other clicks to install and develop your rig and your R&D interfaces so that you can set up for the big run. You don't want necessarily to be going to that other game plan, the sort of run a lot, rely on Desperado to make your runs marginally more efficient. But you can do that if you want to. So yeah, that's definitely the plan B for this deck. So if Corp decks can force you into that plan B by being more aggressive, then that's the right thing to do.
I just want to say quickly that a lot of people on the internet in Kate deck lists, as I was saying earlier, you should look on the internet for your deck lists, tend to use a different style to you and play things like Katie Jones in addition to their voice pads, or maybe instead of their voice pads. Can you just talk a bit about why you don't think that's good?
Yeah, I think Katie Jones is quite weak in this deck because it provides you a one-off boost that is not really what you're looking for, and it requires you to invest clicks in it every turn. Professional contacts can give you a significant boost, not only because it gives you the 4 credits if you click it 4 times in a turn, it also gives you 4 cards, which can be, one of those could be a Sure Gamble, one of them could be a Dirty Laundry, one of them could be a Daily Cast. And the economy boost that you get from a turn of doing that with your professional contacts is huge. And the reason that I mention that particularly in terms of doing it 4 times in a turn is there are so many situations where early in a game, you'll make as I, you'll brick, you'll know there's at least 3, possibly up to 4 or 5 cards if you've got some interfaces in play that are not agendas on top of their deck. And if you can spend those next 2 or 3 turns developing your rig and your economy really rapidly, that's much more effective than clicking Katie once in each of those turns and then gaining 9 or 12 at the end of that.
So this interaction of R&D interface and Maker's Eye, and especially even indexing, gives you a lot of flexibility in the way you want to play and lets you really lean into this rig development whenever you really like to.
Yeah, it allows you to know when it's safe for you to go into rig development mode and when you need to be more aggressive. And that information is huge. And having the cards that are powerful and efficient enough to allow you to develop your rig quickly in those intervening turns is really important, and that's why professional contacts is a lot better than Katie. And same with daily cast, I'll mention as well, because a lot of people don't play that anymore. It doesn't require clicks is the huge benefit of it. So you're getting this passive economy boost. The game, there are so many times when you might feel like losing those three credits is going to be a massive downside. In most situations where you draw a daily cast, unless they're on match point and they're playing Near Earth Hub, the game's probably going to go three or four more turns and you're actually going to recoup the benefit. So yeah, I play daily casts out a lot more than I used to, and it pays off.
In the past, we've seen you play a Levy Arcology.
Levy AR Lab Access?
Levy AR Lab Access, yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you still doing that? How's it going?
I cut that for the second indexing. I was playing one indexing and one Levy AR Lab Access, and I found that it was more of a safety blanket than a really an effective card. I'd probably played, I don't know, 10 or 15 tournaments and many, many games of playtesting, and found that I'd never actually cast a Levy AR Lab Access. It was more of a, you know, if the worst of the worst happens and all of my breakers get trashed, then I've got some other way, and all my clone ships are used, then I've got some other way to get in. But with three clone ships, you really just don't need it. You just need to play better.
Excellent. Good advice. Good advice indeed. That's all we have time for this week. As usual, we would love to hear from you guys. You can send through any questions or comments you might have to thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. Without further ado, we'll speak to you next week. Cheers.
See ya.